Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome along to the VMTV Rugby Pod. Matt Williams and Alan Quinlan with me today. Alan, we will start ahead of round four, the big one, Ireland v England. Last time Ireland have won five in a row against England was back in the 1970s. But this Ireland team, they're going to be very hard to beat, aren't they?
They are. I think everyone is very well aware of and conscious of the quality they have. I suppose it's dealing with that expectation pressure. Is probably going to be the key for Ireland. I think it's very strange that, you know, an Irish side are going to Twickenham, overwhelming favourites. Historically, when I was involved with Irish teams and growing up, even you know, going to England or France was, you know, saying your prayers really as regarding the scoreline and stuff like that, hoping for a situation where you could stop England or stop France in these big games. That's not always been the case now, because of course Ireland have many great teams at times well before my time have gone and got great wins on the road. But, you know, generally in my time it was always a really tough task and England were always the favourites. So it's changed in the last couple of years, and England have had their issues under Eddie Jones, and I think particularly the latter part of his tenure, they've also struggled with an identity of how they're actually playing. I think historically England were always big, strong, physical, good kicking game. And of course they had quality and an X factor that could cut you apart, and they could play great rugby around their front foot. But we just haven't seen a lot of attacking flair from them, and it's probably gone on for a while now. And they're trying to find their feet. I think under Andy Farrell and Mike Catt, after Joe Schmidt in 2019, it took a while for Ireland to get to this position of being a really cohesive, free-flowing attacking side, really good skill set, good close passing, and just so effective at holding onto the ball for long periods. Obviously, it didn't work out, you know, in the quarterfinal against New Zealand, and that's still hanging over this team. So England proved that, you know, with their physical power and their strength, they can cause the opposition problems, and that will be the case on Saturday. So, you know, we saw what happened against England and South Africa in that semi-final. England had that game won, probably should have won the game. So, you know, for all Ireland's brilliant skill sets, you know, England are the ones who could have been in a World Cup final. And but on the balance of what we've seen in the Six Nations, again, England's attack has been disappointing. I actually saw the last game against Scotland. I could see them trying to put a bit of shape in their attack, but it broke down a fair bit again. So for Ireland to go overwhelming favourites is not an usual situation that Irish rugby teams are used to, but it is what it is, and I think this team are quite calm and comfortable, and that comes from the coach. I think he sets the standard with their approach. Fantastic results in Marseille in the first game. I think second, third, maybe might have touched fourth once or twice against in the Wales Italy games, but no more. I think there's a lot more in this Irish team, and I think they'll be very mindful of the ferocity that's going to come on Saturday. That's one thing you're guaranteed, is England are going to really try and rip into Ireland, unsettle them, be really physical. And they have a lot of powerful players. So rugby is, you know, ultimately, if you're standoffish and you're a lovely, skillful team and all that. But I think this Ireland team are not that. I need to clarify that point. We're a physical side, you know. There's a lot of brace of players in this Irish team. They're not afraid of confrontation. just look at the two centres of Aki and Henshaw, you know, Porter, Sheehan, Joe McCarthy being in there now. So, you know, of course they will try, and, you know, there's small margins around those collisions, set piece, all that kind of stuff in any of these big test games. So I don't think Ireland will be scared of that. But they will have to front up themselves. So for me, it's a psychological battle for this Irish team at the weekend, getting their own heads right, their emotion right, and actually you understand that the opposition are going to throw the kitchen sink at you. And England have some very good players. So I think the problem we're talking about, and it's not just me, it's everybody says at the moment, until they prove us wrong, that England are quite bland in the way they play. They will develop their attack more, for sure, I think. And I think they probably realise at this stage that they need to. But at the moment, Ireland are rightly favourites going there. And we've had a really good run against England in recent times, as you said.
Matt, it's a big day for Ireland, but a huge day for Steve Borthwick in England. Reports coming out this week that all they're doing is defending. One of the backs only touched the ball once in training session. Alan said he saw a wee bit more of it against Scotland, which I think we all did. But do you expect them to evolve that attack a wee bit more again? Or is it back to kicking the leather off it, up and unders, and just defending on the mall? Which way do you see this England team, if they are to challenge Ireland at the weekend, going?
Well, if one of the English backs only touched the ball once during training, well, that's reflecting in their games, isn't it? I mean, they're just not cohesive. They, against Scotland, they made 25 handling errors. I mean, that's staggering. You're put on top of that, 22 turnovers. So probably some of those errors can be classed as turnovers. But that just makes a number that's unsustainable for victory. You can't put your game plan in place when you're making that many handling errors and turnovers. Look, I suspect that England will keep going forward. They have no choice. They can't go back, because it's just going backwards is not going to work for them. The only thing you can see, and Alan's is 100% correct in what you said, Stu, we could see the shape, but how many times did they pass the ball and the pass was poor? They threw one pass. George Ford, who I really like as a player and respect, threw two shocking passes. One hit Furbank in the head, that it was a falcon into the Scottish hands that led to Ben De Meur's long-range try. They're making errors left, right and centre. It was a defensive error that led to Ben De Meur's first try when Scotland put on a great set play from a scrum. So, like, first of all, at Test match rugby, you've got to get your defence right. Now, in the last 13 games, I've got it written down here, Ireland have let in 13 tries. England have let in 38. Now, let's just say that again. 13 in 13 games, just one a game, to 38 from England. So England's defence is really poor. You then switch that on its head. In the first three games, Ireland have scored 15 tries. England have scored 6. So, you know, the Alan's description of where England are is accurate. They're lost at the moment. They're trying to go forward. And I think, again, Alan's comparison to where Ireland were post-World Cup 2019 is right. England have lost their way and they're desperately trying to find it. But if they keep that error rate as high, they just won't. You just can't win any game with an error rate like that. Now, what has England got to do? They've got to, first of all, get their defence right. And defence is the foundation. If you don't have good defence, you just can't win test matches. And probably Ireland's defence has been forgotten because their attack is just so spectacular. But Ireland have defended really well, as the stats I just put to you tell us. Now, if England are going to do this, they're implementing a new defence. Just so everyone at home knows what that is, very similar to South Africa. Felix Jones, Irishman, who was in South Africa, has brought it to England. They compact their defence. So, in other words, they leave maybe 15 to 20 metres on the edge free. They stand shoulder to shoulder, and the idea is you come up fast and you trap the ball in that area. Don't let it get out to the fringes. Italy have got the ball to the fringes. Scotland have got the ball to the fringes. Wales, not as much. I thought Wales' tactics were wrong. Ireland beat South Africa 2 times in a row by an ability to have an attacking system with short, fast passes that got the ball to the fringes. So unless England can trap Ireland's ball in that area, Ireland will score plenty of tries. Now, we saw Ireland at a open training session at the Aviva throwing these long, we call them harbour bridge passes, the big archy pass to the fringes. Now, whether that's my cat just playing with English minds, I don't know. But that is where the space is. The second part, for England to score some tries, they've just got to maintain possession. We don't know what their attacking system is because it's been so poor. But in general, Stu, to answer your question and follow on Alan's, England have got to go forward. They can't retreat. Retreat leads to more defeat. The only thing I would say, and I've checked the weather reports, there is forecast of rain at match time. Now, it's a bit, you know, like all forecasts, you can't guarantee it. If it rains, that will play into English hands because it takes away from the attacking team's ability to move the ball as wide as quickly because of your skills deteriorate in the rain. But again, let's also say this is not a good Irish side. This is a great Irish side. This is the best Irish team I've seen. And again, we compare to England. England lose Farrell, and disgracefully so because he was harangued out by abuse from his own people. Their attack loses their way. Ireland lose Sexton, a talismanic figure, put a young Jack Crowley in, and the attack just keeps going. And Crowley's done a fantastic job with the attack. So they're mirror images of each other, of a really good defence, a really good attack. They both lost their leaders. They've replaced them. One team is lost, the other team is found. And it's difficult to not say those things wearing an Irish hat. We all don't like saying, oh, well, we don't want to go there overconfident. Our job, that's the player's job. Our job as people who are observing is just to say Ireland's tactics, their statistics and their form is overwhelming. And the English statistics and form is completely underwhelming.
Alan, the teams are announced tomorrow, if I'm right. Do you see Ireland sticking with Aki and Henshaw in the centres? We know Ringrose is fit. Will he come onto the bench? And also, I want to look at England as well, if you can answer both. The Marcus Smith, he's going to be fit. George Ford, like, do you think Smith will be parachuted straight in? Or which way do you see both Borthwick and Farrell picking their sides?
I don't know. I think I would have been... I like George Ford a lot. I would have been disappointed, but it's a structural thing, I think. In the second half against Scotland, when England had to chase the game a little bit, they were retreating into box kicks. At one point, George Ford drops back when they were on, just got into that England half, got a little bit of a gain line. Great chance to run onto the ball, keep going the same way, and he dropped back into the pocket and put an up and under. Blair Kinghorn caught it, and he puts the ball down the field again. I just think, so I don't know. It depends what Steve Borthwick looks at here and the rest of his coaches and say, can we beat Ireland here by squeezing them? And, you know, the try they got, the first phase try for George Furbank, is a very good try. They're capable of that. England's scrum and lineout will be very good. So they could cause Ireland some problems there in those first strike plays. It's really when you get into multi-phases where they kind of lose their shape a little bit. And if Ireland...
It's funny you say that about the strike phase, because that's when Ireland in 2019, or before that, sorry.
That's where they
hurt teams.
Yeah, and ones that we'd never seen, and we kept calling them Joe Schmidt strike plays, that were ones that they just developed themselves. They weren't picking them up from Super Rugby or from the Southern Hemisphere or anything like that, or what other teams do. So, I think England, of course, Ollie Lawrence is very powerful, and he can get you over the gain line. Tommy Freeman has been good. Furbank been selected at full back for that game. He's a dangerous player as well. So I think they are a dangerous side if they're in the early phases, if you like. If you're soft in the tackle, but I think, as I said, Ireland are a robust side. They're physical. They're they've so many jacklers in the team. They're having second bites at the cherry.
They're not often soft in the tackle.
Yeah, they're not. So I think obviously, you know, mentally you've got to be on it. And I think I'd be surprised if Ireland weren't going to Twickenham. So England are going to have to find some sort of creativity to break them down. You know, are they capable of getting a maul try or two, or you know, squeezing Ireland and just being relentless when they get into the 22 with direct kind of carries and stuff like that? Yeah, of course they're capable of scoring tries. We've got to be very cautious here because I'd be quite nervous about this. So it depends what his approach and mentality is. George Ford wants to attack, but he's been essentially told to kick, and it's part of the game plan. So yeah, if Marcus Smith is picked ahead of George Ford, is he going to allow be that maverick that we know he is, that kind of instinctive type of player who can attack the gain line and make breaks himself? So who knows? It's a difficult one for me to answer. Regarding the Ireland centre partnership, I think it'd be very unfair in Robbie Henshaw if Gary Ringrose comes back straight into the team. I think we'll all agree that Gary Ringrose is the most natural 13 in Ireland and the best 13, but Robbie Henshaw, he's probably more of an inside centre, but he's done a great job over the years there when he's had to play 13 and very capable of playing 13. With a player coming back in this situation, I think you put Gary Ringrose on the bench. But again, I don't know what the conversations are. You know, Andy Farrell hasn't been afraid to kind of make these kind of changes, and it might actually give a little bit more that kind of footwork scenario in that 13 channel. And Ringrose's all-round game is gone to a superb level. He's a very physically strong player as well. Really good defensive reader. He shoots out of the line, gets man and ball a lot. So it's, you know, the three of them are world-class players. I suspect they'll probably just leave Henshaw and Aki and have the likes of Ringrose coming off the bench. Nothing to do with who's better than who or who should be there. I just suspect that they'll kind of ease him back. And what a player to have to come off the bench. And I think that's one of the big things with this Irish side is their bench is becoming more powerful, experienced, and explosive. You know, when you talk about the reality is we'll probably see James Ryan, Conan, Baird, having those guys coming off the bench, Kelleher, probably Finlay Beelum. I think Ollie Yeager started the last day against Italy, but Beelum, Keane Healy, all these players, so much power, experience and physical presence as well. So I don't see any sort of changes or major changes. I think having Hugo Keenan back in the mix is obviously a huge boost for Ireland because he's been so good over the last number of years.
Matt, you talked about him in the last question there about Jack Crowley and how seamless the transition's been since Johnny Sexton has retired. But this is another, you know, he's passed all three tests, I'd say, pretty effectively and done very well. Yes, you talked about his goal kicking, but he's certainly put a stop to that in the last couple of games. But it's another big day for him at Twickenham. You know, another big test which he'll want to pass, but the team will need him to pass.
Yeah, 100%, Stu. And it's funny, we talk about Jack. The hardest part of the game as a 10 is guiding your team around the field in attack. And especially in a system like Ireland's that is wonderful, but it is complex. It's a complex system, lots of short, fast passes, and that is highly, highly challenging. And Jack seems to have got that part, the hard part, down pat. He's a threat. We saw him sort of, you know, he's offloading, you know, against the Italians and the Welsh, his footwork on contact. The fact that he's a threat himself, great passing game. He's done everything really, you know, quite brilliantly in attack, including in Marseille. It's the easy part that is not necessarily challenging, but he's got to still work out because, we all just got to remind, this is a highly talented, developing young player. That's his kick choice in general play and his percentages off the tee. Now, his percentages off the tee against Wales have been great, been fantastic. A little bit up and down, but he just needs to get that consistency. And we saw a lot more of that last week. And again, didn't get charged down last week, which he had early games. And his selection of kicks was much better, much, much better. One or two that you know, he will go back and question. But again, that tends to be the easy part, right? The easier part rather than the attacking part. But when what he did, I felt in the last game, is what all good tens doing. And when we talk about Finn Russell, what he's done, that is underplay your hand. Let the other people around you, bring other people into the game, almost go unnoticed in the game as a 10, is not necessarily a bad thing, especially if the other people around you are playing well. And Finn Russell has done that really superbly. And no greater example than the English game, where he was passing, kicking, and just not making any errors. And interestingly, he did get charged down once, he's in such good form of a vein of form. The charge down went straight to Kinghorn's hand. He went through the gap, and then he stepped up and did the crossfield kick to Van der Merwe. So Russell has done that, and I think Jack could learn a lot from that. But it's also the people around him. I just think the rest of the team knows their role in that attacking system, that complex attacking system, so, so well. Again, if we look at France lose their 9 and 10 and they've completely and utterly lost their way. I think it speaks so much of the Irish coaches. And Mike Capp doesn't get the raps he deserves. He deserves huge credit, but so does Andy Farrell for obviously the culture he's got and the belief he's got and how he's brought Jack through in the system. Remembering, you know, gave him a start against Australia 18 months ago. You know, just brought him through, eased him on, didn't overawe the young man. And now that's been his chance, what's his first game? Goes to Marseille, 5 tries to 1 Ireland. No one picked that. And he comes back, he's been really, really consistent with the ball in hand. And I think this will be, like, let's come back another step. Twickenham, in my opinion, it'll be interesting what Quinny says, behind Eden Park and Ellis Park, I think Twickenham's, you know, the top three places in the world, hardest places in the world to go and win a game of rugby. It is a difficult place to go. Even when England are playing poorly, Twickenham is a hard joint to go to and come away with a W next to your name. It is difficult. And again, this is fantastic for Jack. This is a learning curve for him. And I expect him to do really well. He's been absolutely outstanding with the ball in hand. No two ways about that.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Alan, just picking up on that, I should know this, but I don't. Did you ever win at Twickenham? Did you play at Twickenham? And also, would you go along with one of the hardest three places in the world to win a match?
I didn't start a game. I played in Twickenham a couple of times. I played there for Munster. I didn't play there for Ireland. I was in extended squads there. But yeah, it's an intimidating place. There's no doubt about it. When England get on the front foot and they're dominant, there's a flow of emotion and energy that can pick their teams up. But on the flip side of that, if you can silence the crowd and they're on the back foot, they kind of turn a little bit and there's a lot of jeering and booing and stuff. But it is an intimidating place. There's it's a tough place to go. And historically, you know, I know we've had recent success in the professional era and plenty of it. And
last three Six Nations games, yes, not
the last three Six Nations games. And then, you know, you have sporadically, we won a Grand Slam there in 2018, mm-hmm. the ones that jumped to memory. So I think, yes, of course, it's a tough place to go. But I think the Ireland are, I think there's a determination here to try and, you know, win this Six Nations and maybe, you know, heal the kind of wound of what happened at the World Cup. It was an incredibly disappointing situation for all these players. And that's why I think it was so impressive how they went to France and won that first game. You know, that was the real intrigue of that. But it's a tough game. I think I listened to the England coaches are talking about in the media this week about confidence in their own group. They will talk themselves up. And it's not, you can call it an arrogance or whatever you like. They will believe that they can beat Ireland and that they can smash into Ireland and that they can cause them problems. So it's a tough situation when you're dealing with a team that are coming for a lot of criticism. I'll say it again, you know, they were one step away from a World Cup final. And I don't think Steve Borthwick is too concerned. If England can beat Ireland, even if it's an ugly performance on Saturday,
so a final
if it's
one
drop
on this,
goals
I was
or penalties,
say,
he
if
won't
Ireland
care.
Don't quite hit their strap, say play at 80% and England come out at 100% with
Ireland,
the score.
Yeah, Ireland are going to have to play well. They're going to have to play well here. And I think, you know, you can...
So 11 points in the spread, too high for you?
If Ireland get going, it could be more.
Okay.
But the flip side of that is if Ireland are, you know, and we... Let's be honest, I think the French game at the start, they have their issues. They've kind of shown us in the first three games that France have their problems at the moment. They're not, you know, there's no Dupont, there's no Intermac. They're missing a few other players. They still have a lot of power. They've lost their shape a little bit, France. But it was an incredible result and performance in Marseille. And I think Ireland did a bit of damage to France in that one. They inflicted more pain.
Because we all thought France would win. Didn't we?
Well, I thought it was an incredibly difficult place to go after the World Cup in Marseille. You know, and the intrigue for me was both teams, how will they pick themselves up after both going out in the quarterfinals? Incredibly disappointing. So the point here is England are very dangerous in a sense that they're at home. They'll be full of confidence and belief no matter what kind of results or what way they're playing. I think they'll be blocking a lot of that out. And maybe they have blocked it out and that's why they're still playing similar. But they can cause Ireland problems, but I just think this Irish team are too good. They're too experienced, but they do need to play better than they did against Wales and Italy. I think there were some very good moments in the Welsh game, but Wales held on to the ball at times then, particularly in that second half, for long periods of time, and Ireland looked a little bit disjointed. They were sloppy, they were forcing a few passes. So I think they need to be more clinical on Saturday, and if they do, I think ideally you'd like, from an Irish point of view, go and start well. England start well, they can start believing it. But, you know, we're all speculating here. In summary, I think England need to stop this Irish team from playing to win the game.
So England need to
does
stop
it happen in France in rugby? Of course it does.
Matt, we'll move on to the other games this weekend. France-Wales. Wales still waiting for the first win of the championship. France not in a great place at all. No 10 without Roman Intermac and Matthew Jalibert. Thomas Ramos will come in. Galtier, you've already spoken how much pressure he's under. Which way do you see that going? And it really is a must win for France, isn't it?
It is, Stu. Six weeks ago, the beginning of the tournament, I would have told you France by 20. Wow, I'm not so sure now. I am not so sure. The Welsh, you know, they're showing a lot of courage and guts and determination. And really, France, the decline of the French performance has been, well, it's truly shocking. Like, I certainly didn't expect that. And I think it's really interesting, Alan's point, how did Ireland react to their quarterfinal defeat by the slimmest by Woody Barrett's hand being under Kelly, under the ball who was going to place over the try line to win the game. That's how close they came. What did Ireland do? Ireland came back and said, well, let's heal this, as Alan said, by trying to win back-to-back Grand Slams. And the French have gone the other way. They haven't been able to muster a reason or a goal or a mission to go forward. Now, very interesting. Now, let's be fair to France. They are minus three of the best players in the world in Gregory Aldred, their number eight, who may be returning this week. The team hasn't been announced. Now, he may be back, but he has been out. Endemac and Dupont. Now, Dupont leaves and goes to the French sevens he's going to go to the Paris Olympics. France won the sevens championship on the weekend, the first one they've won since 2008.
He scored against Ireland, Mudd, as well. He scored against Ireland.
Yeah, scored in the last second against Ireland. And he's been, like, all the things coming up. You come up your Instagram thing on the sevens, and it's just him doing outrageous things with the ball in hand. Absolutely outrageous. So they have lost world-class players. There's no two ways about that. But they've also lost self-belief and they've lost confidence. And that showed in that second half against Italy. And it's also showed in the two red cards they've given away. Willems and Dante's red cards and subsequent suspensions were just madness, the absolute madness. And that's when players do that, they're not mentally keyed in. So I think this is going to be incredibly close. And I think Wales have got a great shot at an upset. When you just look at the teams, even though they haven't been announced, we know roughly what they're going to be, although there could be a change in the centres. There will be a change, obviously, that Donty is out. Domaru, the Bordeaux outside centre, scored two phenomenal tries on the weekend. There's a lot of talk, a lot of people calling for Galfiku to be moved to be 12 and to bring him into 13. Other people are suggesting no, that they'll just move Mofana back in there and it'll just be business as usual. A big hard 12 and keeping Fiku there. Either way, there's going to be a change. But when you look at the teams, you've got to say France. It will be close. And if they lost and the Welsh come out on some emotion in front of their home crowd, it would not surprise me at all.
Alan, Wales have picked their team. Joe Roberts, his first Six Nations start, George North out. Did you see enough from Wales against Ireland at the Aviva to trouble France? Yeah?
I saw moments.
But did you see enough?
No, I don't think I saw enough. But Matt makes the point that, France have lacked cohesion. They've, their attack has been poor. They've scored five tries themselves, which is, again, very, very low. Lost to Ireland, scraped over against Scotland. We all remember the controversy of that try at the end. Was it a try? Was it not a try? France hung on and got the results. And then they draw with Italy the last day. So, and the evidence of what we've seen, of course Wales can go and do something there. The problem Wales will have here, and most teams will have, France are not... Their attack seems to have lost their way in attack. And, Sean Edwards spoke a lot before this tournament about playing in the right areas and getting back to a little bit of this pressure and kicking a lot and squeezing opposition then when you, with the strength and the physical size that they have. So I think they're caught between the two and it's just not happening for them. Dupont, Intermac, they're colossal losses for France. World-class players, and they just, it looks like Jalibert is not going to be available now. So Wales, I think moving will, Will Rowlands comes in and starts as well, and Daffet Jenkins, the captain, moves to the back row. Alex Mann is back on the bench.
He's been good though, Alex Mann.
He has, yeah, but I think maybe he's looking at this bit of a size scenario, and to move Jenkins back into the back row and obviously he's your captain. I think Rowlands is a physical player and he's all action. So it probably gives them a little bit more ballast there in that pack. Their back row have been very good. Rafael and Wainwright have been superb. So it's a real interesting one with Joe Roberts starting at 13. He's a very talented player.
Second cap, though, it's a, you know,
yeah, it is,
it's a big ask game, but I suppose that's an opportunity.
I thought from what we've seen of George North, I think in particular, every time he touched the ball against Ireland, he was hard to stop and he was getting through little gaps and pockets. So, yeah, look, I think Warren Gatland was obviously very frustrated and but saw some good stuff against Ireland. But I think Ireland dropped their guard a little bit and were a little bit off as regards the intensity that was required. And, you know, Wales have shown moments. They should have beaten England the first one, I think, in Twickenham. So they could go and do something here. They can cause France problems, but it's about executing and being clinical when they get into good areas, because they're not going to out-muscle this French team. But if they hold on to the ball for the same kind of periods that they did against Ireland, I think they could get some return on that. So they have a chance, a real good chance.
Matt, the last one on Wales, I see the regional sort of stuff come up again with Gatland and Alex Mann. I think it was at some sort of a dinner or a speak, just how like they just can't quite get it right, you know, between what's happening at the regions and the international level. It seems to be such an issue.
Yeah, it's massive issue in Wales. It's very sad, you know. It's we need competition. Everyone needs competition, and if you look where the, you know, the Welsh regions are in the tournament, you know, it's very, very bad for one Welsh rugby. But it's not just that. It's the people that are going to the games, like who are, or more to the point, who are not going to the games. The attendances at the games are shocking. And Welsh rugby, like everyone can use the term rebuilding and all those sort of things. It's been very, very poorly managed. It's just, you know, if you compare that to Irish rugby, don't take where Ireland is for granted. It's continuous good management that keeps teams at the top. Wales and Australia are really cautionary tales, because Australian rugby was hugely great. Welsh rugby was fantastic for, you know, from the Second World War, for most of that period up until the late 1980s, and then it had revived again through the 2000s. Welsh rugby was super strong. Its structures were strong. And now they've crumbled. And they've almost forgotten how to do it. And that obviously begins to reflect on your national team. You can only do that for so long. And we're seeing that with the Welsh national team, as you're seeing it with the Wallabies at the top of the pyramid there. Look, our podcast would need to go for 2 hours to go through the litany of problems that the Welsh have, from finances to kids playing the game to people watching it to capturing the Welsh rugby was like very much like Irish rugby. It was where you were born into it. You didn't have a choice. You were born in Swansea. That's your jersey. You're born in Cardiff. That's your boot. Clonethley. And that has, to a great extent, been taken away, and people have stopped following it because they don't identify with the teams. Unlike Ireland, where people just love Munster, love Ulster, Leinster, Connacht, that's where you're born, that's my mob. And until Wales can get that back, I think they're in a lot of trouble.
Final game of the weekend we'll talk on, Italy and Scotland. Scotland had that good win against England there at Murrayfield. Finn Russell, star with Van der Lobor, Van der Merwe, as Matt says. But what about them against Italy? Tua Plato's injured, but Cameron Redpath will probably come in. Italy, that scramble defence was brilliant against France. Should have won the game, fair enough. Didn't. Was that their chance, Alan?
You have to think, like, they've beaten France twice before in the Six Nations, but never, am I right in saying, never in on French soil?
Only once, 1997, but it wasn't the Six Nations.
Yeah, it wasn't in the Six Nations, yeah. So I think, I think there's a lot being spoken about at the end of that game, that the Garbisi penalty, it should have been retaken again. French players moving forward. William Servat was there moving around. He was given water. I'm not sure it was cynical out of him, but...
You've asked a question so you can answer it. We haven't got your take on that. Should it have been retaken?
Yes, 100%. You can't move forward for a penalty. You can for conversion, obviously, and it should have been retaken. And he's under pressure with a shot clock. If it was in the old scenario where there's no shot clock When did the shot clock come in? Was it last year or the year before?
Yeah.
A couple of years, whatever. I can't remember. But you remember previously, Matt, if there was no shot clock, Garbisi could have kind of taken his time and the ball falls off the tee. So for a conversion, you know, that's a problem if the ball falls off the tee and they've started the charge. So you have to kick it that really quickly then or drop kick it. I think it should have been retaken. It was heartbreaking for them. France should have scored 4 or 5 tries in the first half of that game. Italy scrambled like mad and they, you know, they held on for dear life, and credit to them for that, because you'll always get that effort and work rate out of the Italians, and they can make it really difficult for teams. The Dante sending off, it gives them obviously a numerical advantage and it makes a bit of a difference, and I think France were a bit shocked by that. But the reality here for Italy is they've won one game in 45 matches in the Six Nations. So it doesn't make for good reading. That's that. And the last game they won was 2015. But that was before, They beat Wales 2 years ago. So that's the one game. But before that, it was Scotland in 2015. So you have 45 games and the one game they've won is the Welsh one 2 years ago. Wales have got a. They're going back to Rome or back to Cardiff in a few weeks. Next week, Italy. So they'll fancy that they might do it again there in Cardiff. But look, I think they've played. We've definitely seen glimpses out of Italy of their attack, and the World Cup was disappointing for them. They got a couple of big defeats there. You know, 96-17 by New Zealand. France beat them 60-7. That was disappointing. But you know, for them, if they won this game, any neutral would have loved to have seen them beating France and winning that game. We saw the tears and emotion in Cardiff a couple of years ago when Capuazzo made that break, that counter-attack, and they scored a try. And then Garbisi kicks the conversion to win it and he's on the ground crying. So everyone is fond of Italy and likes him. And they've... You know, their underage teams have done well. Their 20s, they were brilliant a couple of weeks ago against Ireland. They beat France. They didn't start great against England, for sure, but really they probably deserved to win that game in Cork in Virgin Media Park against Ireland, and then they beat France. So they have good young players coming through, and their underage teams have been pretty good for a number of years now. But Scotland are, I think they'll end up regretting what happened against France in Murrayfield, where, aside from the controversy at the end of the try that wasn't given, I think they had control there and they stopped playing, and then they concede the try. France are in front and they're chasing then, they're scrambling and panicking. Tupelotu is not going to play from the centre, so Cameron Redpath came off the bench for that second half against England and was really good. He was the one that made that kind of a bit of a pirouette break for the crossfield kick.
He struggles with injuries, but he's great when he
gets
going.
Yeah, he's a very talented player. So, look, I think they'll be too strong for Italy. It's you've got to earn it up front, particularly against Italy early on in the game, and be conscious and mindful. You know, they were dangerous against England in Rome in that first game as well. So, but I just think England and Finn Russell, who we talk about all the time, he's that kind of player. He looks calm, mature, good decision making. The goal kicking is superb. So he's given them that little bit of flow and momentum. And I liked, again, as I said afterwards, France, in that France game, the way he kind of wasn't blaming that last minute try. He realised that. So I think this bit of leadership has done him the world of good, to be honest. And they're a very dangerous side, Scotland. So I think they'll get the job done. And, you know, irrespective, we're going to hopefully have, well, I think we will have a championship decider, unless England beat Ireland and then they go to France and beat France and they end up winning 4 as well. So, yeah, it'll make for an interesting 2 weekends, but I think Scotland will be, you know, mindful of how dangerous Italy can be, but I think they'll be too strong.
Matt, you like the way Scotland have played this tournament, don't you? You think they're a bit of maturity yesterday, Finn Russell, but also throughout the whole team. You've been quite impressed, haven't you?
I think they've been... within the tournament, they certainly have played at a higher standard than they have in the past. Again, they've been a little bit inconsistent. The first game against Wales, 28 or 27 points, whatever it was, in the first 43 minutes. Then they let in all but one in the second. And as Alan's right, Scotland should never have lost that game against France. Really, and I think they'll beat Italy. They should be coming to Dublin next week for a Grand Slam. They've only got themselves to blame for that. Having said that, this Scottish team, I think the biggest thing for me is the way they've conducted themselves off the field. There hasn't been this outlandish talk. They've been humble, and Russell deserves a lot of credit for that. And so does Rory Darg. I think his work ethic and his ability in the background to keep everyone's feet on the ground and base it on your work ethic, what are you doing, not what you're saying, I think has had a real impact on this side. And credit to Gregor Townsend for the way he's moulded that leadership group. I certainly, you know, if this was Scotland a couple of years ago, some of the guys would come out and speak, you know, they brag. And that was wrong for their performance. Let's not worry about whether we like it or not. It obviously didn't work for their performances. They weren't thinking about striving for excellence. They were saying, oh, we're already excellent. And until you win things and lift trophies, you can't say that. You've got to be humble. And I think the humility this Scottish side has displayed this championship is reflected in their play, because they constantly are seeking excellence by that humility. And that's why I think it'll be a lot closer than everyone suggests against the Italians. But if Scotland can keep building, and that's what that reality does when you say, no, we've got to get better, we've got to get better, which is what Finn Russell is saying. If they build like that and keep building across that game against Italy, they'll win that. And they'll come to Dublin, and they will be a handful at the Aviva. They will be a handful.
Of course, that game, Ireland v Scotland, is on Virgin Media next week and could be a championship decider, we shall see. Lads, as always, predictions. Alan, you're looking at me very glumly there, but you going to get all three right this week?
I hope so. It'd be nice to be able to say, yeah, I told you so, but who knows? I think Ireland, well, we start with the first one. We go Scotland, Ireland and France.
Matt?
I think it's the first time Quinny and I have 100% agreement, is it, mate? I can't remember now across the nation.
Oh, no, we did. Remember. We agreed a few times.
Did you?
We did, yeah.
One or two of them. Mate, yeah, look, Alan's. I'm with Alan on that. Absolutely. Ireland, France and Scotland.
And the best game of the weekend?
Let's hope it's in Twickenham.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's going to be the best game, no. I think France-Wales could be a really good game.
Okay. And Matt,
I think you're right, Quinny. Yeah, I think Quinny's right. If the only chance England have got is they squeeze the life out of the game and make it a wrestling match. If they start throwing punches toe-to-toe, Ireland will rip them apart. The big thing for the English, they've got to cut their errors out. But I think it'll be a dramatic game. But I agree with Alan. I think Cardiff could be an absolute cracker of a game to watch.
We'll see how it all unfolds. Alan and Matt, thanks very much. And don't forget to join us on Saturday for Italy v Scotland on Virgin Media. Thanks for watching.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.